What a provocative title we have, obviously. Bad Moms and Blameless Dads. We could all sit around with a cup of coffee on that one. But it turns out that Laura Santa Cruz wants to talk to us about that, and I'm delighted about it. So for those of you who are standing, if you want to, there's some chairs up in front, and whatever you want to do, whatever makes you comfortable. Laura Santa Cruz is a health initiatives coordinator for the Department of Health Promotion at Cornell University, and she does get the prize for the most provocative title, and this in a session that has one paper on sexual satisfaction, but you still get the prize, okay? So let's welcome her, please.
Thank you very much. So first, I just want to take a second, Bad Moms and Blameless Dads, for really talking about the portrayal of maternal and paternal age in preconception harm in U.S. newspapers. I do not believe that mothers are bad, and I know that we've gotten a lot of heat sometimes for that title if we don't explain it. Thank you. I'm preaching to the choir here. So I'm Laura. I just want to take a second to acknowledge my other authors who are not here. I collaborated, it was truly an interdisciplinary project with Lisa and Zubin, who are both bioethicists, and then Wendy, who's a medical sociologist, and myself, a public health practitioner. So, and of course, working with bioethicists, I have to declare right up front that I have no relationships to disclose. And with that, I'll jump right in. So, what kind of led us to thinking about this project was that reproductive health has historically really focused on women. And we feel that this focus on women is really largely led to the ignoring of men's role in reproduction. And in turn, over time, that has created the societal norm where we blame women for any fetal harm that may result. And we kind of completely forget about the men's role. And we know it takes two to tango. So this was really problematic to me. And so I decided to kind of look at, well, over time, we have seen this expansion. The scope of reproductive health has expanded over time from this limited focus on pregnancy, which obviously makes sense why we would focus on women, to the inclusion of preconception health, which is wonderful because preconception health is important for both men and women. Unfortunately, the bulk of research and discourse on preconception health to date has really still been centered on women. And for example, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, their definition of preconception health, I'll read it to you, a woman's health before she becomes pregnant, with only a brief mention at the very end of their document about a male partner's role in preconception health. And so that's we still have a long way to go. And in addition to this, another component that we really were thinking about was that the public perception of reproduction health or reproductive health is largely influenced by the media. We're not talking about public health professionals, medically inclined people, people who read peer-reviewed literature. We're not talking about us. We're talking about the layperson, and where do they get their scientific information? From the media, from newspapers, from tabloids, from TV shows, etc. And so there have been many studies that have examined motherhood and reproduction in the media, and what they've mostly found was negative attitudes toward mothers, toward older mothers, very young mothers, unorthodox families, you name it, they had negative attitudes toward them. And this was in relation to choice, age, fertility. And this was found; these have been found in TV, tabloids, and newspapers, so a nice cross-section of different types of media. And furthermore, we know that media plays a really important role in influencing public opinion and informing policy. And so therefore, we felt that it was really important to understand how the media represents preconception health and harm, how accurately they're describing the science behind it, which has been published for decades, as well as who they're designating as responsible for the corresponding fetal harms. And so that's kind of where we're at. So I wanted to show you here, there's lots and lots of images of celebrities in the media who happen to be older parents. And you can see Paul McCartney, who had his fifth child at the age of 61. We have John Travolta, who was 59 when he had his youngest son. So we have older parents, and they're often portrayed in a rather positive light, whereas when we see older mothers, we question them and say, is she just too old for this? And as a society, we rarely ever ask this question of men. So there's this philosophical difference in how we are ethically talking about it and the discourse and how we portray this in media. So we're talking about preconception health, we're talking about preconception harm. They're really two sides of the same exact coin, the health status prior to conception, and how that influences gametes, quality and quantity, which then in turn can influence the health of a fetus. And we're talking about lots of different factors. My particular study focused on age, but there are lots of other factors that influence preconception health and harm, such as smoking, drinking, nutrition, body mass index, exercise levels, all different things can have an effect. But we chose to focus on age-related harms. And so let's talk about what the known age-related harms are before I get into my actual study. We know that there are differences between men and women, and I am not going to say anything else. We know that there are differences. Women are born with all of their eggs. The quantity and the quality of their eggs does decline over time, and there have been lots of literature published that show older age has been linked to autism and Down syndrome. We know this information. Men are slightly different in that they produce sperm starting at puberty. They're not born with sperm. They're not born with the ability to create sperm, so it happens later. But what is the same is that the quantity and the quality of sperm also declines over time. And there have been lots of studies that show that older age in men has been linked to autism, Down syndrome, and schizophrenia, as well as other conditions, including dwarfism. So there's lots of differences that happen, but the same trajectory that over time declines. So although we have lots of scientific information about how these age is a mediation for fetal harms, there's been very little research examining how these harms are actually portrayed in the media. And so there was one woman named Cynthia Daniels who did compare coverage of maternal and paternal fetal harm in newspapers in 1985 to 1997 was her span. And she informally observed that we tend to absolve men of their responsibility and really focus on women. But that was the only study done that we know of to date, and it was informal observation. So we wanted to follow up by really having try to do a content analysis to quantify this conversation in U.S. newspapers. So our methods, we used content analysis. That means that we developed a coding framework, which I will go into detail in a second so we understand it. We did an article search. We had a selection criteria. We used the keywords biological clock, maternal age, and paternal age to get our sample of articles, which was 64 articles. Then we applied our coding framework to our articles. We had two coders, myself and Lisa, independently coded them, and then we checked for intercoder reliability to make sure that we were applying our coding framework in the same systematic way, and we did a very good job. Our percent average agreement was 89%, and then we rectified any codes that were off, and then that was our final sample. So our coding framework is 8 tones. And these tones are anxiety, blame, demographics, informational, justice, positive, reassurance, and surprise. And I'll show how we operationalize those in a second. But what's important is that they can be applied to maternal anxiety, maternal blame, or paternal anxiety, paternal blame, etc. And what we did was we coded the articles to see if there was the presence of one or more of these tones. So many of these tones could be present in the same article. So now I'm going to go through these, our definition and an example quote we found in our sample. So for example, anxiety expresses the concern about one's ability to have children and to have healthy children as a result of their age. So for example, some women say a biological clock starts ticking softly at age 30 and gets louder with each passing year. Maternal anxiety, right? The idea of this biological clock. And paternal anxiety is another tone that we were looking for to see. And you can even see by this example, this image, that it's kind of funny, right? That why would we talk about men having a biological clock? It's not part of our consciousness. Blame, suggesting that people should not wait to have children or that they should conceive while they're young because they should avoid inducing harms to offspring. It kind of had this finger-wagging tone to it. And so an example quote, the best way to beat your clock is not to freeze your eggs, but to create a family while you're young and adapt your life to that new reality. So that, again, would be a maternal blame example quote, right? Demographics is an acknowledgement in a value-neutral way that the demographic shift is occurring, where we're delaying childbearing, and that's happening more and more. So, for example, last year alone, about 80,000 women between the ages of 30 and 49 gave birth for the first time. So this, you know, very value-neutral, not blaming, not no tone of that kind, but just showing that we're having older parents. And if anyone here is a physician, you'll know that if you are, or you had a child yourself over the age of 35, a woman over the age of 35 is referred to as a geriatric pregnancy. And so, again, this cartoon kind of illustrates that point. Informational tone, providing value-neutral information about age and fertility or infertility or age and quantity and quality of gametes. So we're talking about, for example, as a woman ages, the number of eggs in her ovaries as well as the quality of those eggs declines. By age 37, only 10,000 to 40,000 of 2 million eggs a woman is born with remain, and a majority of those perish before ever being released. Just simply stating the facts, okay? Now, with justice, this is the only tome that had slightly different definitions, and you'll see why. So for maternal justice, we're talking about this gender equality for women by noting that women must choose between having a family or a career. So for example, there's enormous confusion among young women about how they're going to do this. They have this fantasy they can get their careers established by 28, 29, have children, and then re-enter the labor force. They're not aware of the difficulties of staying home and then re-entering the workforce. They don't realize that there are consequences. So this juggling and choosing between a career and a family. Whereas paternal justice is really talking about gender equality for men, noting that men too share a role in the responsibility of reproduction. So for example, it's not a totally free ride for men, and that seems fair that both men and women have lots to think about. So acknowledging the fact that there is a male biological clock. Stay with me, I know there's... The positive tone was an acknowledgement of the non-biological benefits of older parenthood. So things like they're more financially stable, they have a higher level of maturity, perhaps they're emotionally ready, a strong likelihood of having a wanted and planned child as opposed to an unintended or unwanted child. Example, there's evidence that being older can have its advantages. These fathers likely have more financial stability, patience, and appreciation for what a baby brings to one's life. So a paternal positive tone there. Reassurance is the suggesting of a diminishing risk or the reassuring nature that the risks are very small. For example, men are probably better off not worrying too much about this. The risk of these birth defects, after all, is still quite small, even for older parents. So it's a paternal reassurance, reassuring of the information. And last, our last tone here is surprise, which was treating information about age and preconception harm as somehow novel or unexpected, going against the cultural norms, right? So of course, it comes as a brutal shock when women of a certain age, no matter how youthful looking, find that biology has betrayed their expectations. Example of a maternal surprise tone written by an author of a U.S. newspaper article. Okay? While some of those quotes are definitely part of our results, I want to kind of dive into more of the quantitative, what we found. So the first here is just a graph showing that the number of articles by publication year has been increasing over time, and that is a positive thing, especially since we can't control what authors of U.S. newspapers write. So there's been more and more people interested in writing about this. One limitation, of course, is that we did only look at print U.S. newspaper articles, but they were a nice sample across the U.S. We had the New York Times, USA Today, Washington Post, those types of newspapers were in our sample. One thing to note is that the year 2005 had the highest number of articles in our sample, and we found that that corresponded to when the book, The Male Biological Clock, was published in 2005. So that was kind of the cause of that peak there. Another thing that we did in our analysis was looked at what was the focus of the article. Did the author focus primarily on moms? Did they focus primarily on dads? Or did they talk about the couple, the both moms and dads? And unfortunately, very, very few, only 6%, were focused equally on the couple, on the unit. And of course, the majority focused on men, on women, and then only 35% focused on men, which was higher than we anticipated. So that's worth noting. But what did we find? When the article was paternally focused, that article often contained many comments about women. So even though it was a paternally focused article, they still had to throw in, well, don't worry, women also have things to worry about. And typically they were throwing in maternal information. But when the article was maternally focused, the article rarely contained comments about men. And so this kind of supports that we're conflating reproduction with women only. And when they did talk about men, it was more in a paternal demographic tone. There are older fathers involved. So this is really the bulk of our tones here. The purple indicates maternal tones, the green indicates the paternal. And as you can see, the majority of the tones were more frequent among the maternal tones compared to the paternal tones. So maternal anxiety, twice as high as paternal anxiety. Maternal blame, 3 times as high as paternal blame. Maternal justice, twice as high than more than twice as high as paternal justice. The only two where paternal tones were higher, if you look here, is the reassurance and surprise was higher for men than for women. And overall, you can see there's just very little positive tone at all for either direction. We also looked at a combination of tones. So 69% of articles with maternal anxiety also had maternal justice. When we're talking about a woman's biological clock, we're also noting that they can't have it all. 58% of articles with paternal justice also had paternal reassurance. There was just overall high levels of paternal reassurance for paternal surprise, as well as when we talked about information, they would reassure men. And they did this at a much higher rate than for women, surprise, surprise, Only 12% of articles with maternal information also had a maternal reassurance tone. I'm going to skip over this just for the interest of time. But really what we're seeing is that newspapers are increasingly discussing this relationship between paternal age and preconception harm, which is wonderful. But there's still a high level of surprise, both among men and women, and we treat this information differently as well. So when we're talking about paternal surprise, there's actually a lot of cartoons and jokes. We kind of chuckled when we saw that image of a male biological clock, right? And so this kind of cartoon illustrates this idea that it's somehow there's a notion that men do not have a biological clock. Whereas when we talk about women and the surprise tone, there's actually been national campaigns trying to educate women about their biological clock ticking. And in a very powerful way, I mean, this image of a baby bottle, the milk running out, right? That's kind of a fear tactic almost that we're using here. And a contributing factor, I think, to the maternal surprise is that the media coverage of female celebrities who are having children in older life, in older age, is happening without any discussion of whether they use donor eggs. And so there's this kind of information of celebrities seeing older celebrities pregnant trickling down to the population at large. So what did we find, of course, is that reproduction is still largely seen as the domain of women, not the domain of couples, and definitely not of men alone. And society is really not ready to attribute this age-related fetal harm to men. And additionally, we found that there's no real support for delaying childbearing. We saw very, very low positive tones across the board, and yet it's happening. It's happening at higher and higher rates. And one final thing I'll just add here is that the authors, there are very few solutions offered at all, but they did offer egg freezing as the only solution, right? Not sperm freezing. And we know that egg freezing is expensive. We know that it's it's not great technology. It's not proven that egg freezing will work, that you can thaw them, and it's an invasive procedure. And there was no mention of social policy changes, of child care or flexible work time, or parental leave, paid parental leave, things of that nature. So in conclusion, the majority of our articles, we did find that they focused on maternal age-related harms and that the tone was often more negative for women, but was negative overall toward older parents. And we hope that authors, we want authors, and we want everyone, really, to employ non-sexist techniques in covering this topic, to avoid assigning responsibility and blame only to women, and to discuss the potential for age-related harms for both men and women, as well as to acknowledge the role for paternal involvement, really, in reproduction, but also in preconception health. And with that, I'll take any questions you may have. Go ahead.
With the articles that you examined, did you look at the factors of the gender of the author and their particular background?
So I skipped over that for the interest of time. But yes, so we looked a little bit. In authors where it was public information that we could identify their gender online, we saw that we were able to see that there were mostly female authors of the articles in our sample, but there were 20% who were men. And we looked at if the gender of the author, what did they write about? And so you can see if they're female, they wrote mostly about maternal. That makes sense, right? They know something about that. They may have an interest in that. But they did still write about paternal. When the author was male, we thought, well, they'd write more about men, right? But if you look, they actually wrote equally about men and women. And so, again, this supports this idea of the conflation of reproduction and women focused only on men, not men. But that's the extent that we did with the gender of the authors. Good question, though. Is there another hand on this side? Yeah. Yeah, I'm not aware of any literature that is looking at that.
When you walk
Absolutely.
I'm just thinking, you go to Walmart and look at, there it is, right? And so a lot of times what you see on the headliner is really how you start to establish your intention based upon what media puts out.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right,
that's fascinating. And I haven't seen anything, and I would love to see something on that. One thing that I would note, though, with the demographic shift, there's a lot of societal factors that are contributing to the delayed parenthood, right? So people are in school for longer, and so that's a barrier for conceiving. People also, the unemployment rate is rather high for college graduates, and so the emerging adulthood period is becoming more and more stretched into time. People are living at their parents' houses for longer, so that obviously kind of puts a damper on having children of your own. And also people are living longer. And so we say constantly, 40 is the new 30, 50 is the new 40, right? And so we're tricking ourselves because we are living longer, but our reproductive cycles have not caught up to that change. Exactly.
And what we have in this society is a great stigmatization against people who are childless.
Yes.
The whole phrase preconception, we use reproductive life as what we say, when
yes.
do you want to have a kid?
Yes.
And I think that your talk actually evoked some of those issues as well. Delayed childbearing may be ambivalent, and it may be actually, I mm-hmm. can't admit to a world that tells me to not be a parent, you know,
mm-hmm.
not being a parent is a horrible thing. I can't admit to, I don't want to.
Exactly.
And so that's one thing. I'm betting in decades we're going to be talking a lot more about destigmatizing childlessness.
Yes.
There's sort of a social responsibility piece, too. We have 7 billion people.
Absolutely.
And it may be that people will make social decisions or ethical decisions to become childless, but there's no forum to talk about childlessness being okay.
No. That's a really great point. And additionally, the maternal blame tone did capture some of that. It's not just blame about having kids old, like waiting to have children, but also blame for not wanting to have children, right? And women internalize that blame, have higher levels of anxiety than men. And absolutely, that's a really great point. We were. But we did have a man, Zubin, who was involved in the coding framework and really helped us kind of think through the content methods. We did a pilot code first on other articles that were not in our sample to test out how we did. But yes, we both were women. It's a great question. Absolutely. It's a really great consideration. Unfortunately, we weren't able to look at it just because our article sample size was so small and we can't control what they publish. But I can tell you that the majority of articles really left the race component out, but you could assume as much that they were talking about white, upper-class, middle women who were delaying, and then, of course, the solution of egg freezing, who can afford those opportunities. And so another thing is about the delayed childbearing component that I just mentioned earlier about people are in school for longer. It brings up this kind of socioeconomic status component that I wish that we could somehow find a way to include. I think it'll have to be for a future study, though. Right. Yeah. That's a great suggestion. Fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. Right. Oh, that's really interesting.
And folks, we can also ask questions of anybody.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
If there are questions for anybody, just raise your hand.
Right. Yes. absolutely. We wanted to, and our first idea, we were like, let's do everything, you know, all types of media. And we're like, whoa, we don't know what we're doing. So we scaled back and just tried to say, this is the first one out there. Let's just do the U.S. newspapers. It's easy to collect. We would love to branch into kind of how TV media, is the coverage on TV, tabloids, I think, would be a really excellent place to look at this. Additionally, we wanted to do a study looking at international U.S. newspapers and compare, because a lot of other countries have much more progressive policies in place, social policies in place, and so we wanted to see if by having those social policies in place, if that kind of evenly distributed the blame or the anxiety or had lower levels across the board.
European countries have more pro-natalist policies, though, too.
True, true, yeah.